Welcome to We're Only Human, a podcast focused on blending research and practical advice to help today's HR, talent, and learning leaders improve business outcomes. Let's welcome your host, Ben Eubanks.
Hey everybody, this is Ben Eubanks, and today we have a solo episode. You know, I've talked a lot about the book, a little about it a lot of times. And today I want to dedicate the show to talking about the book that I've been working on for the last about 6 months, and I probably have a couple weeks left to go. That finish line seems to get out further and further every time I get closer to it. You probably know how that is, trying to finish a big project. But I want to talk about the book a little bit because it's one of those things that obviously my life's been wrapped around this thing lately, and it's been the thing that defines a lot of the conversations that I've had. Plus, you know what? I've had tons of stories, interviews, demos, conversations around the topic of artificial intelligence and how it impacts HR, talent, and learning. And my goal with this was to be very practical, get past the hype and the general, you know, hype and platitudes and everything else and the generalities of it, and look at the actual practical impacts on the profession. I want to understand, if I'm an HR, a VP of HR at a large firm, what does this mean for our people? Not just in terms of what technologies do we have, you know, I wrap that into the conversation, into the text, by focusing on some of the technologies and recruiting and learning and talent management and core HR and all those things. I look at the technologies and how to get value out of them, but I also focus on the skills, actually, the skills that you need and the skills that your workforce needs to be competitive in the future. Think about it. You know, let's take the bait. Let's say that 10 years from now, more and more of the technology we use in the workplace, more and more of our workflows and processes are automated. What does that mean for us? What skills are going to be more important? And the joke I've been telling everyone is, hey, you know that person on your team that's really detail-oriented? They probably need to find something else they're good at quickly, because no matter how detail-oriented that person is, how good they are at catching errors, a machine is better. An algorithm is going to catch them faster. It won't get tired. It won't miss things. It won't make the same mistakes that we will. So let's find something that we can do more importantly, hopefully, or a little better, more humanly, let's say. And so as I'm wrapping this up, it's funny because right now the publisher probably would prefer that I was writing instead of talking about it. But hey, what are you going to do? So today I want to tell you three of the core stories that help make a foundation for this impact, this conversation about the impact of AI, algorithms, bots, and more on the workplace. I want to talk about these three core stories because they're kind of, as I've gone through the book, I keep coming back to them because they tell stories that are interesting and unique and help to really highlight what it means for us in the future as these things are coming, you know, faster and faster, more technologies. It helps us kind of get our minds around those. And so, again, I'm a story kind of guy, so you'll hear those. They also form the core of a keynote that I'm developing. Three of these stories, I've done a little bit of presenting on the topic already, trying to really hone that message. And to be fully transparent and open and honest, I haven't finished the keynote piece because I'm trying to get my stories together. And so these are three of the core stories that are going to make that up and help us to tell the story the right way. I want to tell it so that you walk away feeling like a little bit wowed by some of the things that technology can do, but also really grounded in what you need to do next and how to prepare. So I've already been setting up presentations on this, webinars, keynotes, breakouts, sessions at all kinds of events. I'm really excited at, even though the book doesn't come out until December. So again, a little bit of time ahead of me. If you're curious about the book, want to learn more about it, the website is aihrbook.com. That is aihrbook.com. So the first story I'm going to tell you about comes from Uber. Last year I wrote about this, and it's one of the stories I think really helps us to understand what it's going to be like as more and more of the workplace routines and processes are automated. So a pair of researchers went through and looked at Uber's data, and they found that the drivers were actually feeling like they were powerless. Okay, they don't like working under an algorithm. If you're a driver for Uber, you don't have an interaction with a human. You don't talk to people. You know, you can go to some online forums and things and connect with other drivers. But in general, in your day-to-day work, you don't talk to people that work for the business. You don't have a manager that talks to you. You don't have a manager that gives you feedback. None of those things happen. They are completely and totally faceless. It's all run by an algorithm. And some of the people felt like the algorithm was treating them wrong. It wasn't helping them get their bonuses. It was penalizing them. It was giving them routes they didn't want. And if they didn't take those routes, it was penalizing them further. So they felt like they were getting the short end of the stick when it came to that. And so the Uber drivers did what any humans would do in a situation where they felt like they were oppressed. They fought back. So the people actually started doing things like they'd organize a mass switch off so that the pricing would surge whenever there are fewer drivers in an area than demand, such as like on a Friday night when everyone gets out of the movies, or you know, people are going out on the town Friday nights or Saturday nights, there's a big spike in usage. So the drivers would organize a switch off en masse, and so the pricing would go through the roof. People would get angry, and those drivers that were driving would get a bigger chunk of the profits. So it was one of the ways they could fight back a little bit and try to push back against those things. One of the other pieces of the research that they found was even being, you know, constantly surveilled, being under surveillance on their phones, customer reviews, like all these things, drivers' behaviors and all those other things are kind of factored into it. And you might get a ban if you don't obey orders, again, from that algorithm, not a person. Maybe you don't want to go in this part of town because it's not a safe neighborhood. And so you always reject rides that go through the neighborhood. Over time, they might actually ban you from being a driver anymore because of that, even though for your own safety, you'd tell your boss and say, hey, I don't feel comfortable going there. And that person would say, you know what, let's find a way to work around this or whatever else. You could have a conversation, but the algorithm doesn't allow you to do that. So people fought back against this thing, and it's the problem with working for a system rather than a company, because you don't have interaction with people. You don't have interaction with those humans, and we feel like we need that. We don't work well under this supervision of a bot. And so I think, again, in any sort of instance, maybe workers have a strict policy about something in the workplace that they don't agree with, they're going to fight back to the degree they can. They want to regain that sense of control and autonomy in their work. And if we look into the future and we assume that more technologies are being automated, things like that, processes, all that stuff in the workplace, if we assume that is true, what does it mean for our people? How are they going to react to that? Are they going to react the same way these Uber drivers did? Are they going to react in a different way? How can we make sure we temper that to the right degree so that we can have the most productive people we can? Because the rosy picture that everyone paints is algorithms are going to take over these things that nobody else can or wants to do. Well, the problem is if people don't work well with those, if those things are making decisions that people don't agree with, and there's no transparency and there's no interaction, then people are going to fight back to some degree. There's actually this concept called algorithm aversion. And so the idea is if there's an algorithm that's making a decision, we don't trust it. We don't fully trust the algorithm that's making the decision for us. However, the researchers have found that if you have the ability to make a very slight or small tweak to that algorithm, a very small change, even if it doesn't fundamentally change the actual end result, if it doesn't make any impact on the result at all, but you felt like you got to have your say and the system calculated it in to some degree, then we're happier with that. We're more willing to believe in the algorithm. We're more willing to believe in the predictions and the things that it says are going to come true. All right, so that's one piece, is the Uber people fight back against the algorithm story. The second story I want to tell you about is around Georgia Tech. One of Georgia Tech's online classes has around 350 students for every single semester. And one of the professors realized that over the course of a semester, there were 10,000 messages posted to the discussion board. And even with a slew of teaching assistants helping him out, it would take him forever to try to respond to all those conversations. Imagine getting 100 emails a day for 100 days, and that's how many they have to cram into a semester. So it's a lot of work. So they said, what if we created a chatbot that interacted with students that would answer their questions? Because when you think about it, every single class that restarts at the end of the semester, the new semester that starts, those students all have pretty much the same questions that the last set of students had. So if we could teach a system to understand those questions and respond to them, then we could really decrease our workload on that front, and we can focus more on other things that are actually important to us. Maybe it's answering those really nuanced questions. Maybe it's having more theoretical discussions with students and philosophical discussions instead of just focusing on how many pages does this assignment need to be and other sorts of, you know, routine questions like that. So they built a system to do that. They actually analyzed the question and answer pairs from the forum for the previous couple semesters in the class, fed all that into this machine, said, okay, understand these things. And they set it loose. They called it, they called the algorithm Jill Watson, and Jill Watson after the IBM Watson AI, obviously. And so Jill was a teaching assistant. They introduced her purely as a teaching assistant, didn't tell anyone that it was actually an algorithm. So they wanted to see how it worked. Well, sometimes Jill would give a really good answer to a question, right, spot on, no issues. Other times Jill would give an answer that was wildly off base. You know, someone asked a technical question about a coding language and she would respond with the length of that the term paper needs to be. So sometimes it was off base. So they set up a second system, they called a mirror system, so that kind of a closed environment where Jill could be fed questions and she could try to answer them, and a teaching assistant, a human person, would go in there and review those answers to see if they made sense or not. And as they kind of tweaked the algorithm over time, she got closer and closer, more accurate in her responses. And once she got up to about 97% accuracy, they put her back in the real world and let her go. And what they loved about it was if a student in Shanghai and a student in San Diego and a student in India and a student in the Middle East all asked questions at the same time, they'd all get an answer from Jill. They could do it any time of day or night. She's always keeping on it. And again, it freed up the professor and the other students, to the other teaching assistants, to focus on more important tasks. So over time, Jill's getting better and better and better, more predictive about these things, doing really, really good with, you know, saving them the trouble they were looking for. Well, there came a time where a student actually said, you know what, I'm starting to wonder if Jill is actually an algorithm or not. And once that kind of came out, they said, okay, you know, you got us. This is an algorithm. This is actually a program we designed to help you out. And after that, students started asking strange questions of the algorithm. Just, I don't know why. It's hard to predict that. But they started saying things like, hey, do you want to go out with me? What's your favorite movie? Things like that, that obviously the algorithm doesn't have a personality, doesn't have a choice in that. So it's a no, or it doesn't understand those. And people started asking it very human questions, which is interesting. The other piece of that that I think is interesting is that they have re-released that algorithm into new classes since this happened, but they changed all the names of all the teaching assistants and of Jill so that you don't know which one's the algorithm and which one's not. And they actually have been very proud to say that students are having a hard time figuring out which one is the bot, which one's the real person, which one's a real teaching assistant, because the answers are so realistic, so specific, so lifelike, so helpful, and so descriptive. So a good example of how on the learning front, on the knowledge management front, those pieces of the business, things that need to get done, we can have a piece of technology helping to support those things so that we can get back to those really core important pieces of work, whether it's delivering instruction, as with this professor, delivering instruction, helping with problems, answering questions, doing higher level, higher touch kind of work, instead of just grinding away at answering 10,000 forum questions about things that are really maybe self-explanatory, maybe already in the syllabus, maybe you answered this an hour ago and someone else is asking the same question. Getting rid of all those kinds of tediousness. Anyway, getting past that and getting to the real work, the real value that you can bring. All right, one last story. So this last story is one, I'm actually going to reference this story. I might say it word for word, again, in an upcoming episode, because I was telling a friend about it and we were talking about storytelling. So it came in my mind, because it was a story that I told last week at an event. There's a recruiting event called SourceCon. If you're not familiar, it's where the smartest sourcers and recruiters get together and they try to share their best ideas and hacks and tips and tricks and all those things for finding people that no one else can find. It's really a hardcore nerd recruiting event. This isn't about how to post a job on a job board. This is about how to find someone that no one else can find. Really hard to find talent. And SourceCon does a competition. Well, last year they did an event called their Grandmaster Competition where they pit some of the best sourcers in the world against each other. But last year they had a twist. There was an algorithm competing against the people. And they wanted to see what would happen. So the goal of the competition was you download 5,000 resumes. They're blinded. The names are pulled off, but they're 5,000 real resumes from real people. And then you download 3 job descriptions. And you have to figure out, of those resumes, which people were interviewed and ultimately hired for those jobs. And again, these are real jobs from a real company somewhere else. So you have to back into which ones were hired, which ones were interviewed, and you get points for each correct selection. So ultimately, I'm going to give you, spoiler alert, the humans win. A man named Randy Morrow actually beat the algorithm. He went through and picked all of the people correctly that were picked for the jobs. Second place, a pair of humans tied for second place in terms of correct guesses. The algorithm came in third, and anyone else came in after that. See, the algorithm, what was interesting here is that the humans took between 4 and 24 hours to get their guesses together, to do their searching, to do the figuring, to estimate, to calculate, all that stuff. It took them between 4 and 24 hours. The computer took 3.2 seconds to get to its estimations, and it came in third place. So pretty close, not 100%, but pretty high up there. And the thing that tells us that this kind of helps us to understand is that it's not a question of either or. The question is of how to blend these things together. It's not going to be just a machine and then we're going to blindly go with its recommendations. And we shouldn't also rely purely on a human to spend 24 hours grinding out this thing when an algorithm could help us get to that answer, a close approximation of the answer, in less than 5 seconds. So the right balance in the future is going to be figuring out how do we, navigate that, those waters, understand where the human needs to make the decision, how much of the heavy lifting can be done by the algorithm, how much do we trust the recommendations it's making, things like that. Again, those are 3 quick stories, fairly quick anyway, that help us understand how AI is going to change the workplace fundamentally, how it's going to affect us as recruiters, HR leaders, learning leaders, how it's going to affect those things we do. And I hope you enjoy that, but also hope it helps you to get your head wrapped around this a little bit, around how this is going to change some of the things. Again, it's not about all the hype. Hey, this is going to hire the best employees and it's going to fire them when you don't like them anymore and it's going to cut your grass and it's going to wash your car. Those things don't exist, okay? But in terms of helping you to solve some of the tough challenges and the tough problems, whether it's recruiting, whether it's learning and managing knowledge in the organization, or whether it's about managing people, assigning work, things like that. Those are 3 examples of how that's going to work, how it's going to blend together, whether for good or for bad, and how we need to be thinking about those kinds of things as we move into the future. So again, as I mentioned earlier before I started the conversation, the stories, I have a handful of webinars and live events already set up where I'll be speaking about this topic or some version of it. For example, at the SHRM Diversity and Inclusion Conference later this fall, I'll be tweaking it to take a look at how algorithms can help us to avoid bias and how algorithms can have inherent bias in them, where you might be programming a system to do something and without realizing it, you're programming it to be just as biased as your human managers are. So thinking about those kinds of concepts. At a learning technology user conference, I'm going to actually focus on the learning piece and more around skills development. What are the skills that we need for the future? And I didn't talk about those earlier in the conversation, but the skills kind of matrix, this model that I've built out in the book, is based on a handful of things. The C's, easy to remember. Number one is creativity. Creativity separates us totally from machines, because those one person actually that I interviewed said imagination is what has generated every great idea ever for humans, and that's going to continue to be a differentiator for us. So creativity, collaboration, curiosity, asking questions and being curious. Critical thinking is a big one. Critical thinking is really focused on solving problems and getting deep into something, not just the quick Google and answer, but really digging in and helping to solve problems and going deep into a topic and being able to pull the pieces out and make a decision. Because again, computers aren't good at that kind of thing. They're not good at that component of understanding where the gaps are in the information, what parameters might not be fully fixed. And then the last one is compassion. compassion and empathy and care and concern. Those, that concept of, hey, you know, fundamentally being human means caring about others. And as much as we want to program a machine to do that, it's never going to be 100% the same. I love the movie Big Hero 6. My kids love it. It's one we enjoy. But as much as I love the movie, if you haven't seen it, one of the main characters is a robot that's been built to be a healthcare companion. It's built to be soft and fuzzy and nice and, you know, soft-spoken and friendly. But as much as that, they kind of portray that in the movie, if I'm getting a hard diagnosis or something else, I want a human that can kind of empathize with me, that can care and show some compassion that a machine just can't do. So those are the five skills that I think will be important into the future. And again, there's lots of research to kind of back that up in the book. I talk about some of the studies and things that prove that out. But that's the Learning Conference. For a recruiting webinar coming up, obviously I'm going to talk about examples of AI and recruiting, from sourcing to selection to matching candidates, preventing bias, internal mobility, like all those different use cases and how that matters. Also talk about where that balance is for recruiters to pair up machines to get the best results. So again, if you can't tell, I am freaking pumped about this, okay? It's really going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be I can't turn around today without reading something about AI. And a lot of the things that I'm reading, I'll wrap up with this. A lot of things that I read are negative to some degree. They're focused on, here's how many jobs this is going to replace. And honestly, and I say this plainly in the book, those are all guesses. Nobody has any clue. We can make general guesses. We can make statements based on, you know, something that happened in the past. But we honestly don't know how many jobs are going to change, how many jobs are going to be replaced, how many jobs are going to be created because of these changes. We don't know. There's no way of fundamentally knowing. But I wanted to really give someone not the fear and the hopelessness that comes from reading that kind of stuff, but the hope and the, I don't want to say faith, but the hope that they can actually impact the future by focusing on their skills, by understanding the technology components, and really understanding how to do that. The way that I frame it in the book is this. If your CEO or your leadership team hasn't come to you yet, one day they will. And they're going to say, hey, what's this AI thing? And does it matter to us? How's it going to impact us? And I want this book to be able to help answer that question for the HR leaders out there, the talent leaders, even the business leaders that want to understand the human side of it as well, focusing on all of them in the book. And there's going to be some really great takeaways. So again, one last time, if you want to learn more about it, you can sign up to kind of get the inside track on things as I share them out, AIHRbook.com. And you can get on there, get on that list, and I'll share things with you only about the book. I won't spam you, nothing else. Just things about the book, announcements, and when that's coming out, so you can get the best information as it comes out. So next time I'll be back with another guest interview, as you're kind of used to. Today I wanted to take just a minute to talk about this because I've had conversations in the last couple of weeks with friends, family even, which is always kind of surreal because they still don't kind of get what I do. Friends and family and everyone else talking about different pieces that revolve around the book, whether it's the skills piece, whether it's the technology piece, or even people just generally talking about AI in the real world. What does it mean? Is this just a myth or a hype or whatever else? And so I've been really plugging this any chance I get because it's something that I think is going to really help all of us to get our heads wrapped around the topic. So thank you for joining me today for Wheeling Human. I am Ben Eubanks, your host, and I will catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to We're Only Human. Please take a moment to share this episode with another HR leader who might see it as a valuable resource in their daily work. For more information about the podcast and to see all our show archives, please visit upstarthr.com.